live from the Third Coast. It is our time to focus on where genealogy and spirit connect. A time to focus on our connection with ourselves and our past. Here's your host, Susan E. King.
Good morning, everybody, or afternoon. It's another Tuesday down here on the Third Coast. It's hot, and I think it's pretty much hot everywhere these days. But in any event, it's a beautiful day, and we've got a wonderful hour scheduled for you, so we're excited about getting going today. You know, one of the things that comes asked of me in my private practice all the time is, you know, how come the Mormon Church seems to have all of the genealogy records? And this really depends, it doesn't matter what religion you are, but if you need a record and you can't find it anywhere else, in many cases the records are usually housed on microfilm at the Family History Library in Salt Lake City. And a lot of times people do not understand and really why the Mormon Church is so involved in genealogy. So I thought it would be interesting this hour to have someone who is very much involved in both genealogy and religion and who is in Salt Lake City, who really understands, you know, what the, I guess the religious practice is for why genealogy is so important. And I think we're going to delve in a little bit to other religions and how this practice that the Mormon Church does affects other religions. So I have as my guest Helen Radke. I probably, if you had listened about a year ago, she was with me back then. And we're going to have an interesting conversation. And the other thing is we will be taking your calls. I want to give out the number. It's 888-815-9756. So welcome back, Helen.
Thank you, Susan. I appreciate you inviting me on your show again. Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. Let's talk a little bit. You've been involved for many, many years in genealogy, and then really your focus is on religion. And, you know, could you explain to the audience a little bit why genealogy is so prominent and why the Mormon Church has been... I mean, it's a wonderful thing that they do because they have records there that sometimes can't be found anywhere else. But, you know, why is the fascination? Let's just start there.
Well, let me just put in a positive plug for the Mormons before we get to some of the negatives. They do have a marvelous genealogical facility here in Salt Lake City, the Family History Library, and there's a satellite Family Search Center at the Joseph Smith Memorial Building, which is just a couple of blocks away. But the Family History Library on West Temple is the main center, and I've been going there for about 17 years, and it is a marvelous facility. And I will say that they do allow anybody, I mean, I've been banned once and threatened twice, but anyway, we can go into that later, from the Family History Library, but that was because I was pulling records that they didn't want, you know, they didn't want the information to go out. But normally, for most people, they can go into the Family History Library, they don't have to be a Mormon, and they can access the, from the huge stockpile of genealogical records there, they can go after their family history. So there's kind of a no-strings-attached policy that the Mormons have. Jewish groups go there, just going after their family history and nothing else. I'd like to say that that's it, that it's a marvelous genealogical facility, but unfortunately, the main purpose of this vast collection of genealogical records that the Mormons have is to provide genealogical data so that Mormons, in particular, can go there and look up their ancestries, in order to do Mormon rites for their dead ancestors. And unfortunately, many Mormons don't leave it at that. They do other bloodlines. They perform rites for other bloodlines outside of their own direct lines. And also the church extracts and has these programs going like indexing where they extract from vital records, and they have this data. They supply their temples with a huge amount of data because they have a lot of temples, and temples are being opened, new temples on a regular basis, and they've got to keep these temples with a supply of names so that they can have enough names to process. So the underlying purpose for Mormon records is that the dead must be offered salvation according to Mormon beliefs. And unfortunately, by claiming exclusive rights to human salvation, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, also known as the LDS Church or the Mormon Church, undermines the legitimacy of other religions. There is no getting around it. You have to be a Mormon according to Mormon beliefs in order to be worthy to live in the presence of God for eternity. There's no ifs or buts about it. You have to go through the Mormon ordinance process, either alive or dead.
So really what you're saying, Helen, and let's kind of take a few steps back, because when I first started doing my research on my family 25 plus years ago, I went to Salt Lake on many, many occasions. Because at the time, that was pretty much where the records were. There were no online services as we know them today.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I was a little shocked being born and raised as a little Jewish girl to find one of my lines sealed to the church. And I didn't quite understand what that really meant.
You say one of your lines. Who was the person sealed to again?
It was sealed too. They were sealed. All I knew is that the records, when I came up with some records, it was a Felsenthal line, actually. It was a German-Jewish
uh-huh.
line. And the records were there, and they were sealed by an individual, my ancestors, to the Mormon Church. And I didn't understand what that really meant. And really what you're saying, and I guess I just want to get a little bit clearer explanation, is that it just because my ancestors were not Mormon, the Mormon Church, if someone is, in this case what you're saying is they don't even need to be related to them. And once upon a time, if they felt that they were related to someone, then they could seal, quote-unquote, S-E-A-L, their ancestor, which could be my ancestor, to the Mormon faith. Is that correct?
Yeah. Now, Mormon processing is complicated. A lot of people don't realize that the Mormon Church has its own complex set of rules in order for names to be submitted for dead people. But these rules are more often than not are violated by LDS Church members. So if you're looking at names that were sealed, they seal people to other people, children to parents or spouse to spouse or spouses. So it depends what type of records the Mormon Church used in order to bring about that sealing. Did it use records that it took from extractions, or were these records submitted by members? Ordinarily, if you've been dead for, if you were born 110 years ago, you're presumed dead. If you were married 95 or more years ago, you're presumed dead. If the ancestors were born within the last 95 years, the submitter is supposed to get permission from the closest living relative. So there are rules and there are guidelines and there are standards. A person's got to be dead a year before they can be baptized posthumously. So there are a number of rules, but these rules get violated. Ordinarily, if the church has taken it from their own extracted records, that will be an older record. It will be somebody who lived probably in the 1800s, because they haven't even got around to doing my grandmother, who was born just after 1890, but they've done about five generations of our line before her, and those have been done through church extractions. So it depends on exactly, you know, what type of record that we're talking about. But the thing is that it's from 17 years of pulling records from Mormon databases with ordinance information attached, I would say that overall LDS church members regard the world, anyone who ever lived, as fair game. So whatever names they can get, and the more well-known people are, those names are going to go in, and sometimes, many times. It's what a Mormon genealogist friend calls higgledy-piggledy, and it's such a chaotic mess. These poor Mormons are trying to save everybody, and so they just pile everything in. And I think what is troublesome for a genealogist is there are so many excellent records in the Mormon system, but it's all religious revisionism. They're trying to redo the religion of the dead person. And then also inaccurate vital data can be very, very irritating. They can't get it right. They couldn't even get it right for a Jesus Christ record in April this year. I mean, they couldn't get the dates right. The submitter stumbled, managed to get the birthplace correct, the deathplace correct, but the names were messed up because they wanted to get the entry into the system. But there's a lack of, professionalism about a certain percentage of Mormon names. I know I'm getting off the subject here, but it depends on, getting back to your question, it depends what type of record this was taken from and how it was done, and the, who was sealed to whom. If it was a Jewish line and it wasn't submitted by a Mormon, an LDS church member, and the church got it, they would have got it from vital records.
And so really what we're saying, and this is what I guess is bothersome to some of us, is that 150 or 200 years from now, or even longer, mm-hmm. that according to people who are doing research, if we're sealed to the Mormon Church, then everybody may indeed think that we were Mormon during our lifetime.
Yes. Now, there's no telling what the LDS Church is going to do with its databases. When Mormons and Jews signed an agreement in 1995 that the Church would curb the posthumous baptism of known deceased Jews, including and especially Jewish Holocaust victims, LDS ordinance data was an open book as far as the public was concerned. It could be accessed on CD-ROM. It's an old DOS file that's still currently available at most family history centers, including the Family History Library. And you could go and look on this file. You can still look up until January 2000 was when they ended that particular file. And you can see the ordinances. In May 1999, the International Genealogical Index, which was known as the IGI, and that is now frozen. It's obsolete, but it's still accessible through FamilySearch.org. That went online, but ordinances were only accessible to accredited Mormons with a password. But you could go in up until, you still can, and I think last June was when they stopped adding names, the June before last, I'm getting mixed up with the dates. But anyway, it was a few months ago they stopped adding the names to the IGI. Now, names that are being processed through LDS temples are only currently accessible through New Family Search, and that is only accessible by people with a login, and you can't even see the names that are going in unless you have a login. I have a way of accessing that information, and when I'm asked about it, I say I have to protect my confidential Mormon sources. But in other words, we simply don't know what is happening. So since that agreement in 95, and as it became more and more obvious the church was not keeping its end of the agreement, because thousands of Jewish Holocaust victims, their names have been subjected to LDS posthumous ordinances in violation of the 95 agreement, but now you can't even see what's going in the public. So I don't know in 110 years or whatever, Susan, where we're going to be at database-wise. I mean, who's going to be able to see the names of the people, of the deceased people who have been subjected to posthumous Mormon rites? That's anybody's guess. But just in the course of between 1995 and when New Family Search was more fully released, which could have been roughly 6 months ago in this area, you had such a massive changes where you have got data being hidden to such an extent we don't even know now what names are going through unless you have a way of accessing it.
So really what you're saying, and let me see if I can clarify this, is that because of their religious beliefs, what the Mormons are doing is they're going in and they're taking lists of names, and it could be Holocaust victims. I mean, it could be victims of the Haiti earthquake, for all we know.
Uh-huh.
And basically going in and entering these names and posthumously baptizing them into the Mormon Church. Is that what we're basically headed
now,
to?
Yes, that's correct. It's unlikely they're going after the Haiti names. Usually, I mean, they go after any names, but usually the more accessible the names, the easier to get, the more likely they're going to go after the names. And particularly if there are Mormons who have a keen interest in a certain group of people. For example, there's a substantial group of active Mormons who are keenly interested in Dutch Jewish Holocaust. And they've been putting in names year after year after year. Now, I assume that they're getting these names from online lists, from government lists. There is at least one deceased Mormon I know of who collected these names and had a stockpile of them in a shed not far from where I live. And when he died, he authorized members of his family to continue illicitly and improperly submitting these names into the LDS system. So it depends. I would say the Haiti earthquake, it's unlikely, unless there was a keen interest there. However, you never know what's going to pop up, because I found 14 of the 9/11 hijackers in the Mormon database, including Muhammad Atta, the fellow who was in charge of the bombings, and one of the names slipped through, Salem El-Hazmi, I think his name was. He was on the plane that crashed into the Pentagon, and he was posthumously baptized in a Mormon temple in 2009. So they can be pretty unpredictable. If they're going to put 9/11 terrorists in for posthumous baptisms, I guess anything could be subjected. But they do kind of randomly go through lists. But World War II there's been a preoccupation with World War II lists. There's no question about it. The more accessible the list, the more likely they are to end up in the Mormon system.
So from a spiritual point of view, because I know you and I share that in common as well, I mean, really, what does this mean to a lot of people from a spiritual level? I mean, you know, there's one frame of mind that might say, look, I know who my family was, and I know what they were,
uh-huh.
and you know, it doesn't matter what you do, you know, we're going to be who we were through eternity. What's frightening about it, I guess, in one respect, is the fact that the 150, 500 years from now, that, you know, people just aren't going to know who their people really were.
That's possible, assuming that the LDS Church continues to do this and has an impact upon society with this activity. I don't know if they keep on hiding the records, because I think, Susan, there's a certain amount of unpopularity in the community at large about what Mormons are doing, because what they're basically doing is invalidating the beliefs of the people they are supposedly offering salvation to. And irrespective of an individual's belief about the other side, the idea of somebody being expected to be made a Mormon, so to speak, and that's it, and then having, like being given an opportunity to go to the celestial kingdom, which Mormons believe is the highest realm of existence, and, the idea or the belief in polygamy is very high in Mormonism. Mormons teach that we become gods and goddesses, and in order to do this, gods need plural wives. So actually, it's quite horrendous and repugnant to a lot of people, the certain aspects of Mormon theology, and although the Mormon Church pretends that it has distanced itself from polygamy, I was on a local television show here a few days ago, and I produced information about Mormon records that show that polygamy is very much an ongoing thing in Mormon temples today, and I'll be doing another program on this next week, and we'll be talking about polygamy for famous people, including celebrities and movie stars. So you have a lot of aspects to this that are very, very peculiar. And I like to think that as individuals, we go to the other side and we can simply be ourselves and then go from there, and we can evolve from where we left off on Earth. The whole idea of being expected to be enmeshed in a theology that to me is personally not for me, in order to be exalted, is quite repugnant. And I don't know if a lot of Mormons see that. I think you have many do-gooders who are trying to genuinely save humanity as they see it and offer them this temple work, quote-unquote, which to them is very valuable. But to me, the offer is repugnant. So, you know, there's different ways of looking at it. But my perception of the other side is that when we pass over, we go through an individual review process, and there is no expectation to be converted to a religion. That's not, I couldn't even relate to that idea. That's where I'm coming from. I hope I've answered your question, haven't digressed too much.
Well, no, you have, because, I mean, you and I share the same belief, and I think a lot of the audience shares the same belief, and you know, we'd like to hear from some of you out there if you have some ideas, concepts, and feelings, too. And I'm going to give out the number. It's 888-815-9756. I know that the Jewish population is one of the ones that's you know, been very much up at arms about this whole process, because the whole concept of their beliefs and the Mormon beliefs are very, you know, very, very broadly. And, you know, I mean, it's very hard for Jews to conceive and understand how any one group can take lists of people who were victims of such an atrocity many years ago, and can be, you know, baptized into a religion that is not theirs. You know, I mean, where does fairness really begin and fairness really end? And I guess that's really something that has really been very bothersome to many people.
Yeah, it's been bothersome.
Who are we, and are we, you know, I mean, who are we, and are we, you know, going to allow, you know, another religion to make us something that we're not? And I think that that's really, in a nutshell, some of the theological concepts that are going on behind the scenes of this whole concept of genealogy. I mean, if you go back to genealogy, and you and I both know, it goes back to the Old Testament.
Yeah.
When Adam and Eve begat, and then everybody begat somebody. And, you know, so the whole concept of genealogy really goes back to ancient times.
The problem with what I would perceive as the very much failed Mormon-Jewish agreement that was signed by an LDS Church representative in 1995, in which the LDS Church promised to issue a directive to curb its members from submitting names of known Jews who were not related to, who were not direct ancestors of living Mormons, or they had family permission, which almost invariably never happens, because I had the genealogist for the Anne Frank family, who lives in Virginia, contact me one time. He wanted to know who gave permission to the LDS Church for Anne to be baptized. She's been posthumously baptized at least 9 times. So, yeah, but you've got different levels of problems here, because one of the biggest problems I know, as the representative on the research end for the American Gathering of Jewish Holocaust Survivors, I represented them at the news at the research at a news conference in November 2008, the 70th anniversary of Kristallnacht, at which conference some of the Holocaust survivors complained about the Mormon Church and blew up. Some of my research was used in the background, along with pictures of Auschwitz deportation and the family of one of the survivors. And the Mormon Church was commented on because it hadn't kept the agreement. But back here in Salt Lake City, the Mormon Church held a news conference and denied it had not kept the agreement, even though it did admit at that conference that it had removed 43,000 names from one of its databases, and this is all post-95. So one of the biggest problems that I had as the researcher was the constant denials of the church that it was violating the agreement, hiding a lot of the data. I would dig it out, and of course I would be this bad anti-Mormon with this horrifying agenda, because I was trying to access this data, even to the point of getting banned from a family history center at one time because I was pulling Dutch Holocaust records. So you have, that was one problem. Then you have, why are they doing this when these Holocaust victims, the whole message behind their mass murders was, you're not good enough, Jews. Nothing about you is good enough. You don't deserve to live. So the last thing that the memory of these Jewish Holocaust victims need is to be told posthumously, you're not good enough. You have to be made into Mormons. And that's why some of us felt so strongly, specifically about Jewish Holocaust victims, even though all Jews were included in the 1995 agreement. And it needs to be pointed out, too, that only Jews have a written agreement with the LDS Church. The Church downgraded it to calling it a memorandum of understanding, but as to the best of my knowledge, the consortium of Jewish groups that were involved with the signing of the 95 agreement, led by the American Gathering of Jewish Holocaust Survivors, are the only groups in the world who had an agreement with the Mormon Church, and the Mormon Church has not kept its agreement. What it should have done and hasn't done, again, to the best of my knowledge, up until recently, it hasn't reprimanded the members or taken away the ability of the people who keep submitting the names, especially the names of the Dutch victims, over and over and over and over. The church does have the power to curb that, even though it is indicated that it doesn't, but it is written into the agreement that it would correct the members who keep doing this.
And what you're saying too, Helen, is that we as people do not have any rights to say to anyone in the, you know, that, hey, I don't want my relative to be baptized.
You can, but because the name submission process is left up to members, they can submit names now through New Family Search, so they can put in any name. And I know if something happened and I passed on, invariably my name would go in just to spite me, even though technically it was supposed to be routed through their first presidency, but a lot of Mormons don't obey the rules. Now, also though they may have safeguards to block names, so somebody could put a name in, an inappropriate name, and the name could be blocked. But it's amazing, the names that don't get caught. I think that, you know, you've got Nazi names that are in there that have just been recently posthumously baptized. There's other names connected with Nazis sitting in there. They find ways to slip names into the system. They'll add a mother's maiden name onto the surname, tack it on, and that'll get a name in. And so there's various creative ways of getting names in. But you could protest and ask. One of the key Jews involved with the Mormon Jewish agreement issue has written it into his will that he not be posthumously baptized as a Mormon. But it's hard to say, you know, whether that will or will not happen.
Right, and that's my question, is there's no guarantee that anything that our wishes would be honored.
Well, you could, if you found out later, if somebody else in your family found out later your name was in there, they could protest to the church, and then they'd either remove the name or they'd put on the LDS ordinance part of the entry, not available, which could block temples from processing that name further. But you would, how would you find out? That's the thing. I get a lot of inquiries to look up names, and I don't offer that as a service because I get blitzed with inquiries. Is so-and-so my relative in the Mormon database? But I would say, why is the Mormon Church hiding what it's doing? You know, so you wouldn't know unless you were able to communicate with someone who could access that file.
So what we're really saying is there are really two pieces of this puzzle. You have the one piece where a Mormon who might share the same relative as someone else, that they would present that name with their family tree to be sealed along with the rest of their family.
Uh-huh.
And that's one situation. And then you have another situation whereby I go pick up a book and it might have, you know, 3,000 names of Jews or somebody else and who died in a particular death camp. And people are going in and entering those names manually one by one by one by one by one.
Mm-hmm.
Is basically you're talking two stories here.
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, you could have any number of ways of putting records in. One good thing that New Family Search has that the other Mormon programs didn't have, it combines records so that if you've got 10 entries for the same person, it will combine the record into one record. But, and irrespective of whether it's been submitted by a descendant or whether someone has taken it from a list. But there are, there's some difficulties around, you know, these members submitting huge family trees. Generally, if you go back a fair way, they may not be treading on toes, but the closer you come to the present, where there are living descendants, the more likely you are to run into problems. But I think the critical point here is that the data is being concealed, and I don't know at what point the LDS Church is going to make it possible for the public to access anything in New Family Search. There's supposed to be something going on there, but how are we going to know, you know, what the church is doing without a way of accessing the files? Because they're going to do what you have said both ways, and they're going to continue to do it, and it's going on regularly.
So it's possible too, Helen, then, that the billions, and I mean billions, of records that they have in the vault in Salt Lake in the mountain, whether it's on microfilm, that they're going through those records, and they could be entering all that data into this private search engine where they're using that to build whatever the database is to begin the baptisms of anybody and everybody that ever lived on the face of the earth that is documented.
Yeah, New Family Search, I've been told, is very similar to the LDS Temple file, the file that's used by the temples. So you're going to have a lot more data in that file than was previously accessible on the old CD-ROM version of the IGI or even the online IGI, which is now redundant. So you can see in New Family Search just how many records, if you look up New Testament characters, Old Testament characters rather, ancient Egyptians, I mean, you'll see these names all in there. Their LDS ordinances will be noted as not available in most instances, but there's a huge array of data in there. I mean, it goes right back to Adam. I found a record for Cain recently, ready for posthumous ordinances. He's probably been done before, but I mean, they've even got Book of Mormon characters in there. They even have God. I mean, have had God. Jesus. I mean, and not just one entry. So nobody's off limits as far as the Mormon Church is concerned. But again, they may have the system set up so that if certain names go in, a block will go on the record. Because you could find that by this time there could be many dozens of entries for Michael Jackson unless they have combined them. And the records, I haven't looked up his name for about 6 months, but they were all with blocked ordinances. So it does have a way of trying to, you know, the inappropriate records of putting a flag on the record, either to block the temples from processing the name or to block what's already been done. It's pretty complicated when you're going after everyone who ever lived.
And what you're really saying, and from what I'm hearing, is that there's no standards and there's no quality control. There's no
data integrity.
And no regard to other people.
That's correct.
Other people's beliefs.
Yeah, unless there's been a complaint, you know, and they do have ways of blocking the names, some names, but they'll, again, members find creative ways of resubmitting the names, and it goes on and on. And I think that the idea is with concealing the submissions at this time is what people don't know won't hurt them. I kind of view it as that's their policy. Well, we've taken so many attacks on this, we're going to curtail public ability to be able to access this information. But again, I do not know the plans of the LDS Church. I'm not a family search consultant. I can only say what I have discovered through 17 years of research in Mormon databases with ordinance data, but I can't say that, you know, the Mormons are going to hide this information forever, but at the moment it's not publicly accessible. So we don't know what they're doing to your great-grandmother or great-grandfather, you know, they might be in there, they may not be in there. But I did complain to the church a few years ago about some of one of my lines, my grandmother's line on my mother's side, and they did remove names from their IGI online database. But, you know, what's the point? Because they keep all the records and they go into other files, their private files. So really, it didn't mean all that much. And then if the names are gone, what's to stop somebody resubmitting the name? But sometimes names will be there and they'll just simply show the ordinance as not available. So, you know, but they definitely go after family lines. If you go back, this particular line, the last generation I got that had been subjected to ordinances were mid-1700s in England, and the church had got these names from Church of England records, parish records.
And I know for a fact that they have gone and microfilmed records in Poland and records in Germany and records everywhere, really around the world. And, you know, I mean, and I'm a firm believer in you know, freedom of religion. There's no question that everybody should have a right to believe what they believe. But, you know, what becomes bothersome is having, you know, be put in a position where my name or my relatives' names are being, and I maybe this is too dramatic, being forced to be something they are not.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think the I've been through all the I won't say all the justifications that Mormons use to offer the deceased supposedly the opportunity to become a posthumous Mormon. And I don't buy any of them. Usually they will say the deceased can accept or reject the offer, but the wording in the prayers in the temples are pretty definite. There are no disclaimers. There's no if you don't accept this, you know, you are just automatically baptized. You're automatically confirmed. So you've got that way of looking at it. Also, I believe that Mormons in general, when a lot of times when confronted, well, why are you doing this? And they'll say, well, they can accept or reject. It comes across as a justification for using names of bloodlines that don't belong to them, because basically they're trying to steal bloodlines. And so they have to explain and justify why they are attempting to do this. And it is a put-down of all other religions. So they're walking a very difficult road, because they're trying to be chummy to other faiths, especially here in Salt Lake City, and yet at the same time they are meddling with the deceased of other faiths. And so how do they sort of walk this fine line with a great deal of difficulty? But hiding records seems to be a biggie these days, because you have a greater volume of names going in. They have more members doing this. They have more temples that need names. And so it has become a big problem. And they may have difficulty monitoring such a volume of names. So it's hard to say, you know, how far this will go. I don't think they're going to stop doing it, but on the other hand, I don't see why we should just smile and say, well, that's nice, Mormons, that you think so highly of us. You're trying to invalidate our deceased folk. But those are just a couple of points about the baptism of the dead process. I think the thing that really gets into my craw, Susan, about this is the arrogance. It's the blatant arrogance of, why are you trying to prevent us from doing God's work? We are only doing good. And it's the insensitivity towards other faiths, towards people who do not necessarily share their beliefs, and particularly concerning Jewish Holocaust, it is the blatant insincerity by LDS officialdom in saying we are very, very sensitive to what happened to Jewish Holocaust, and yet, as these Jewish Holocaust names were improperly submitted by the thousands into Mormon temple files, there were blatant denials that went on for years that this was happening, and still to this day, you have LDS officials, an article came out recently in a Jewish Canadian newspaper where one Mormon official said that the church had kept its word 99.99% concerning Jewish Holocaust names being processed, re the 95 agreement, and this simply is not true. So, you know, you have different ways of looking at it, but some of us have kind of had to focus on priorities, and Jewish Holocaust has definitely been a priority for me because I believe very strongly that these people lived as Jews, they were murdered because they were Jews, and they should always be remembered as Jews. And I don't even think that a group such as the LDS Church should be able to keep a hidden database of these names and that they should be challenged on this. I feel this very strongly.
Well, you know, what I think is most disconcerting, too, is the fact that, again, you know, looking down the road many, many hundreds of years is, you know, that the identity of all people are being shaded by one group, because at the end of the day, nobody's going to really know who anybody was, because, you know, if you have this database that has everybody's name in it, and they're baptized as Mormons, then in effect, what we're being told is, no matter what we are and what we believe in, we're going to die as a Mormon.
Hmm.
Is that basically what we're up against?
I don't know, because, as I said before, we don't know exactly what they're going to do with their records, but the potential is there. There's no question the potential is definitely there. And I think the very idea that we should become Mormons is repugnant, because it goes hand in hand with polygamy. And if somebody chooses polygamy, then that's fine. And by polygamy, I don't just mean a guy with multiple wives. I mean a man with multiple wives or a woman with multiple husbands. So some of us just simply wouldn't choose that lifestyle, not now on the earth and not in the hereafter. But Mormonism has a very, you know, different and unusual theology, and some of us just simply don't go along with any of it. So I think there's a problem there, you know, with the idea of people alive or dead, you know, accepting a theology that doesn't gel with their spirit. And there's also it's cut and dry with Mormonism. If you don't accept this, either in this life or in the next, you are not going to be redeemed, fully redeemed. Now, the only exceptions to this would be those Mormons consider having been baptized by someone with authority in what they call other dispensations. Those would be the only exceptions. However, what's terribly odd is that when you go into their database, you'll find records for Old Testament patriarchs, I mean, Moses, Abraham, even John the Baptist. Some of these names have disappeared, even Jesus. I mean, you'll find these names in there, and it'll have LDS ordinances not available. But sometimes I wonder if they consider anybody who has been validly baptized in other dispensations. I just don't know. It's such a muddle their record. So that's the thing. Mormonism is so cut and dried. It doesn't, we are the church. We have the authority to baptize. We are the only ones who have the authority to baptize. It's not like Buddhism where you can believe in principles. You can live your life according to, you believe in like the law of karma, the law of cause and effect, consequences. You can say, well, I'm going to apply this to my life and believe in it, and evolve through living that principle. Mormonism is very different. You have to believe in this onerous church structure and which kind of this priesthood power that sort of moves along with it, and the temple rituals, which are very, very peculiar. And at the time I went through an LDS temple in 1975, they were very bloodthirsty. If you didn't live a certain law, you agreed for your throat to be cut, you agreed to be disemboweled. I mean, they've been modified, the rites, post-1990, but nevertheless it was a shock to go into that, not expecting that it was going to happen, because we were not told ahead of time the contents of the rites. These are not the type of rituals that I would want my ancestors to be subjected to. Even a modified version.
So, I mean, basically you have been a Mormon, correct?
Yes, very briefly in the 70s.
Okay.
And I was...
So you're very familiar with the processes and the beliefs and...
Yes,
and,
very familiar. The theology,
And for those of us who aren't, and I mean, it's not something I you know, have read that much about. I know a couple of times I picked up the Book of Mormon in the hotel room when I was in Salt Lake and, you know, read a little bit of it just to try to get a handle on the whole concept. But
I think,
you know,
the fact that the rituals are so distasteful to me definitely does affect my, you know, my opinion on why I wouldn't want my ancestors or, you know, Jewish Holocaust being subjected to these type of rituals, because there was nothing about them that was edifying or uplifting. Some of them were quite coercive. There was nothing there that I came away and say, well, that was a marvelous experience. It wasn't.
And these rituals, are these pretty much the same rituals then that they use to posthumously baptize
Although I went through a LDS temple in Hamilton, New Zealand in 1975, and the LDS Church modified the rituals around 1990 and has eliminated some of the oaths and penalties, the more bloodthirsty ones. So there have been some changes to the rites since when I went through. However, the actual rituals themselves, the baptism, the confirmation, the Melchizedek priesthood for males, the washing and anointing, the endowment, the sealings to parents for children, and the sealings to spouse or spouses, those are still the same, ordinances. So they haven't changed those, and deceased people need to go through all of these different stages. Unless they don't have children or unless they were single. And in some cases, they'll actually match you up with someone, even if you're single. I mean, they'll still have spouses. They'll put bogus spouses on there next to the name. So,
this is a genealogy nightmare.
Yes, it is. I'm going to be talking about some of these on the next TV show. I'd love to mention a few names now, but I want the names still to be there when I go on the show. So you have this mishmash of human relations and people being sealed to each other, but basically in order for the sealing ritual to be effective, the person needs to be baptized. So the rites are supposed to be done in a certain order. They're not always done in that order, but more often than not they are. So it'll start with a baptism, then with a confirmation. But the rituals that I was talking about that were really gross were part of what's known as the endowment ceremony. So you're in the creation room, and those rites have been modified. But they were just awful.
Well, I mean, even polygamy is a genealogy nightmare.
Yes, Well, it's a big tangle because they're sealing divorced people to divorced people, and they are permitted to do this, and it's got something to do with providing opportunities for the children to be sealed. But if you're a movie star with five wives and four ex-wives, or a king, you know, sealed to wives and mistresses and concubines, it can get to be a great tangle, especially if exes are sealed to their exes and their exes. I mean, it's a little bit oddball. To say that.
And what we're saying too is that movie stars and politicians and really doesn't matter, Holocaust victims, are all on these lists.
Yeah, and you know.
And are all being baptized.
Talking about Jews, David Ben Gurion was baptized under David Ben Gurion, baptized under David Green. His birth name, and baptized under David Grün, which is the German version of Green, and he was sealed to someone called Rachel Nelken, and he wasn't married to her. And that was, I believe, in 2005, and he was sealed to his actual wife. But that's not unusual. I'll find records that are, now, who's this person? And you'll go back and find that he knew someone by that name, and that's about it. And so you think, well, what's going on here? But it processes because the system doesn't question. And
right.
The submitter was able to get that name in under, it wasn't easily recognizable.
Helen, we have run out of time, believe it or not.
Okay.
You want to give out your email address? And we have run out of time.
It's hradke@msn.com.
If you want to contact Helen, if you have any questions, please feel free to do it. This is a very interesting topic, and I know that everybody might sit on the fence in a little different way. But in any event, we're going to explore some other things in the coming weeks. Have a good day. Have a good week. We'll see you next week.
You have been listening to Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect with Susan E. King. Each week we will focus on the spiritual journey of connecting ourselves with our ancestors. Join us every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific right here on BBS Radio. For upcoming show information, you can visit Susan's website at www.susaneking.com.